Welcome to episode 95 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. This is the second part of what's going to be a continuous series in which I'll showcase multiple individual or smaller groups of shots that would not in themselves make a full episode, and I'll provide my thinking behind the image along with any relevant tips and techniques that I might have. Today we'll look at six more images, and that will be it for a while, but as I add more individual shots to my online gallery and I'll build a list again and start to get ready for part three and onwards. We'll just keep going like that. If you have any shots from my gallery that you'd like to know more about and that I haven't covered in other podcasts, please drop me a line by private message from the forum or by the contact us form, both at martinbaileyphotography.com. Also remember that it's always nice to actually hear you too. So if you want to record an audio message or a question that I'll include in a future show, you can do so with the Mobitalk message service at the top page of my website. The images this week are all much newer than the pretty old ones that we looked at last week. All shot within the last year with my Canon EOS 5D, which is a full-size sensor digital SLR camera. The first image that I wanted to look at is image number 1159. This was shot on the banks of the Kawaguchi Lake in the Yamanashi Prefecture, which is where I go to shoot Mount Fuji every so often. I was visiting with a friend over from the UK and had spent a little time shooting Mount Fuji from the bank there. And as I was doing so, the ladies that we can see in this image were tending the flower beds on the bank of the lake. When I finished and turned to head for the car, I noticed these ladies all sitting eating lunch like this. I said hello and we started chatting, and they asked if we wanted to sort of sit down and share their snacks and a cup of tea. And, I of course thanked them, but said that, I couldn't because the other half was waiting in the car and that we should really get back. And actually at this point they asked if my missus was Japanese. I replied yes, and they then asked also if we had kids, and I replied with my usual response, which is no, we're still practicing. And usually this just gets a laugh and then the conversation ends. But these earthy ladies didn't stop there. When the laughter had died down, one of them asked how long we'd been together, and I told her 16 years. And she said that this is an incredibly long time to be practicing without results, so I must be crap at it. So I laughed and could do no more than just agree with her. And having broken the ice, though, in this way, I felt very relaxed about asking if I could take their photos. And they kindly agreed, and I sort of watched as they adjusted their hats and just sort of shuffled around a little bit, getting ready, and before I started to get the shot. And unfortunately, though, I still had the camera on the tripod, and so I couldn't really get any lower than this. I didn't want to mess around taking it off and start to unnerve them, but I just shot a frame and thanked them again and sort of went on my way. I was relatively pleased with the results, and I decided, as you can see, to convert this to like a sepia coloured black and white image. I did this really to remove some of the distracting colours in the bags and the clothes and to really age the image, as the relatively traditional working clothes of the ladies seem to lend themselves to that. I obviously also have cropped the top and the bottom of the image, as they add nothing to the scene. There was some quite harsh shadows across the face of the ladies, though, because of the hats and the angle of the sun, which was quite high by this time, which was around 10 a.m. I didn't really have time to think about my settings and the impromptu nature of the shot. I was still at f8 with ISO 100, and the shutter speed was 1/250th of a second. I wish that I'd thought to open the aperture up a little to say around f4 so that I could have softened the background and the foreground a little. As it is, I think there's too much detail in the grass, but I guess that it can't be helped now. Still, this shot has nice memories of human interaction and kindness, which is worth a lot to me. A few hours later on the same day, I shot image number 1161. This is a fairly standard landscape shot, with the iconic Mount Fuji taking up most of the background. I like this shot because of the clouds that form as the breeze blows across the semi-snow-covered mountain, which really contrasts nicely against the blue autumnal sky. The other autumnal elements, such as the browning grasses and the trees, with the pampas in the centre of the frame there, all just sort of build up a nice classic landscape scene. What I wanted to talk about here more than anything is that all is not what it might seem to be. My intention with the image is to portray this classic landscape scene that I have, but in reality there's a relatively busy road running between the pampas grass and the line of trees in the middle of the image. I actually had to shoot about 6 or 7 frames here to get one without a car in it. This is cheating in some ways, yes, but all photography is about what we leave out of the shot, right? We choose telephoto lenses, for example, to get us closer to our subjects, but we're not really getting any closer. Of course, we can move closer, but if it's not an option, we use a telephoto lens to get us in closer. What we're really doing is just enabling ourselves to remove more of the world around the subject than we'd be able to with a wider lens. Similarly here, choosing the right moment to release the shutter is another way for me to remove a car or two that would have given the image a totally different feel, which I thought was just worth a brief mention. In image number 1426, we can see one of those dreamy flower shots that I like to make. I always keep an eye out for these sort of flower shots where the flower is situated with a nice bright background that I can use for this kind of bokeh. These flowers were very low to the ground in a border either side of a line of trees in a formal garden in a park here in Tokyo. See how I've placed the two almost vertical stalks along the right side of the frame, and then allowed the diagonal flower to create some nice bokeh breaking up the scene. I placed a number of blue blotches along the bottom of the frame to anchor it down some, along with the darker patch below the brighter green patch in the background there, again adding weight to the bottom of the scene, improving the balance of the image. I was shooting with my 100mm macro lens with the aperture set to 3.2, for a nice shallow depth of field. It was a little breezy on this day, so these frail flowers were blowing around quite a bit. So I set the ISO to 200, which gave me a nice fast shutter speed of 1/500th of a second. In addition to talking about the image itself, I wanted to touch on something today that I've been doing for so long from habit, bad habit, I would say. And it's something that I realized when shooting this image, that it's just been something pretty stupid that I've been doing for a while now. So this is so obvious that I reckon that most of you are already doing this, but just in case you're as silly as me, here goes with an explanation. When I need to get really low to the ground, lower than the tripod will allow me by opening the legs up sort of at a wider angle than normal, you know, the only thing I can do to get the camera really, really low is to set up the camera on the center pole, but taking it out and reinserting it upside down so that it hangs down with the camera upside down underneath the tripod with, you know, the center pole there a little longer usually than other times. But the stupid thing that I've always done is that because I've been trying to get as low as possible, I often only extend the legs, you know, as little as possible. Really, just enough to get the camera to the necessary position. What this means, though, is that the space between the legs is relatively limited, and I end up having a hard time really getting my eye into position to look down into the angle finder. On this occasion, quite by chance, the concrete blocks either side of the flower border were spaced out at such a distance that I extended my tripod legs much further than usual, so that I could place them on the concrete, not to damage the other plants in the soil of the border. This meant, of course, that I had extended the centre pole down much further than usual to get the necessary low angle. But when I started to shoot, the photos from the tripod, as it was set so high, it was just basically allowing me much more room to get sort of in between the legs to view the scene and, you know, just generally much freer access to the camera. And so most of you will probably be thinking, yep, you were being pretty stupid until now. But hopefully at least some of you will have realized that, you know, that maybe you're doing the same thing. From now on, I'm definitely going to be inserting the pole, leaving it much longer, sort of dangling down as far as possible from the center of the tripod, and then extending the legs as high as possible to sort of get me the necessary required height. And I can imagine that, you know, this will make the camera slightly less stable because the, extending the center pole is never a good idea. But as it's sort of dangling down with the weight of the camera, rather than sort of, you know, the weight of the camera sitting on top of a long pole, which is probably going to be much more unstable. Really the thing there is that, you know, it's probably still going to be much more, supported, and not a lot of difference, I would imagine, between that and using it much shorter. And especially when you consider that I sometimes sort of bang into the legs of the tripod because everything's so sort of compacted together. So really just a silly thing that I've been doing for a long time, thought that I'd share it just in case some others were doing a similar thing. The next image that I wanted to look at is number 1461. I had a brief exchange with Wayne about this shot using the comments feature of the gallery. Wayne is a long-time member and major contributor to the MBP forum, so this is actually a great time just to say thanks to Wayne for your comments here and for all your excellent contributions in the forum and the members gallery. So Wayne noticed that I'd shot this in manual mode and asked how I controlled the highlights, stopping them from blowing out. He asked had I used a spot metering or if I'd just adjusted the highlights in Lightroom or things like that. Wayne also asked how many exposures I made to get the exposure right. So I thought I'd share my answers here in the hope that it might be of some use to others as well. This was shot in my local park during an afternoon walk, and the subject is a cascade of backlit ginkgo leaves. I had to act quickly as the light was hitting the leaves just right at this point, but it would be moving pretty fast as it poured through a small gap in the trees, between the trees. I used manual mode because the very bright leaves against the dark background were going to fool the camera's light meter, and as Wayne pointed out, had I not taken the appropriate steps to overcome this, the leaves would have been totally blown out. Because I keep my eye on the exposure indicator in the viewfinder, I can pretty quickly sort of get a good idea of how close the exposure is going to be. That carrot does still move around even when you're in manual mode. So I can't remember exactly where it was, but I knew that I needed to underexpose quite a way to stop the leaves from blowing out. So I set the shutter speed such that I could see the carrot there under zero, pretty much way under zero. And then I took a test shot and checked the histogram and could see that I was still clipping slightly. So I made the shutter speed another two-thirds of a stop. I think it was around two-thirds of a stop faster to compensate further. And now, knowing that I would not be clipping the highlights, I shot about 10 frames with slightly different compositions for each. I was trying to get the edge of the frame, the edge of the right on the right there. You can't really see that, see, because it's just very dark. There was a tree and there was light coming in from the right side of that, but I wanted to stop that. So I wanted the edge of the tree that's creating most of that black background to not come into the frame. And I also wanted the leaf at the top and the one at the top right and the one at the very bottom to be in the positions that you see here. It was that beautiful green gradation on the leaves that was really what drew me to the scene or the subject in the first place. So I really wanted to get them in the best place to make them really stand out. I'm relatively pleased with the shot. I love the greens and the dark background. And I actually, because of a typhoon that's sort of, it's just about past now actually as I record this, but there's been a typhoon coming along the south of Japan and just sort of gone off towards the sea south of Tokyo. But that really gave me, you know, because the weather's been sort of a little bit too sort of blustery along with the rain over the last day, it gave me a chance to do a bit of printing. And I printed this out yesterday on the Epson professional papers, and it looks pretty remarkable. I know I'm blowing my own trumpet again, but I really do sort of love printing out shots and then getting that, holding that big A3 plus print in my hand. And this is one of those that I've been meaning to print for a while and finally got round to it yesterday, and it was pretty gratifying. So next let's look at image number 1462, which was shot shortly after the last image during the same walk. You can probably see really why my other half gets frustrated. I can't even go out for an afternoon stroll without stopping every 5 minutes to shoot photographs. Here again, I'd spotted a flower in the shade, but with a patchy sort of, you know, a light patchy background there. And as that's pretty much, as I say, I'm really looking out for these sort of situations. And so, you know, again, I'd got, you know, the low sun coming in from the side of the trees. And so I had to work pretty quickly. And what I did was I just wanted to get that brightly patch of orangey, sort of yellowy and green lights to make a background for what would be, you know, the relatively dark hydrangea there that we see as the main subject. I had to stand on tiptoes so I could position those patches of bright bokeh in the way that I did here. But I just think that it makes a very nice sort of background and just something a little different, you know, than your normal sort of flower shots. The shading has actually caused the leaves of the hydrangea to become almost blue as I was shooting in the daylight white balance preset. I don't want to correct this white balance as it would throw out the colour of the bokeh, and the purple of the hydrangea flowers is actually pretty much as I recall it in the shadows there. Plus, I really just like the overall tone of the image as it is. One tip that I wanted to pass on that I recalled when looking at this is something that I've actually not done yet myself, despite being carrying around a piece of kit to do so for more than a year now. I always carry around an A4-sized piece of semi-transparent, almost white plastic, with the idea that under the right circumstances I could hold it over a flower to darken that, you know, by cutting out around 50% of the light hitting the flower, and that would allow me to brighten the background by comparison. This would mean that I could create a similar scene to the one that we're looking at here, but in full sunlight. I wouldn't have had to actually keep an eye out for these kind of situations if I really got this, if it works the way I'm expecting, because I'll be able to create it with this piece of sort of semi-transparent plastic. I prefer to shoot things as they are, though, and I'm kind of contradicting myself here straight away. This is probably the reason why I've not used it yet. I think what's going to happen is there'll be a time when I can see a sort of a set of elements that will make this, you know, make for a very good shot, but the light won't really allow me to do it. So I'm still carrying this piece of plastic around with me. And, you know, the other reason that I carry this plastic is for the opposite reason. There may be a time when there is actually too much contrast between the main subject and the background, and I could use this to level it out rather than increasing contrast. I'll get both of these, you know, techniques shot, you know, in some way, you know, within the hopefully near future. And when I do, I'll show you the results and let you know if it works the way that I'm expecting. So the last shot for today is image number 1466. When I'm out and about, say for a shopping trip or something where I don't go fully kitted out for photography, I often just take my camera with one lens fitted in my Lowepro top loader bag with a little pouch of goodies like my blower and spirit level and spare batteries and filters, etc., attached to the side of the bag. In that pouch, I often also have a Lens Baby 2, which I sometimes drop onto the camera and shoot some shots just for fun. And this is what I was doing. I was waiting, again, always out and about with the other half, but I was waiting while she was in the library and just sort of shooting in the library grounds and, you know, really just having fun. The thing with the Lens Baby is that it will actually allow you to take some pretty good shots, even though it's a really cheap and easy to use lens. In this shot, we can see what I think is the flowers of the pomegranate tree. The fruit is actually already quite large behind these flowers, so I think I'm IDing this correctly, but I'm not 100% confident. For those of you that have never used the Lens Baby, they're good fun to play around with, as I say, and one of those things that I can find really exciting is that, you know, the way you change the aperture. Basically, the lens comes with a little case that contains a number of rings and a tool for pulling the rings that are already in place out from the front of the lens. And then you just drop the next one in, and it's held in place by a bunch of magnets. And actually, thinking about this, I'm not sure which part is magnetized. There are a number of shiny studs around the inside of the front of the lens, but the ring itself, though, although it's pretty flexible, it actually looks more magnetic than the studs. So, you know, I don't know which it is, but either way, there's some magnetism that holds the ring in place. For this shot, I'd placed the f2.8 ring in the front of the lens, and this gives you just about enough aperture to shoot a sharp image, but really still allows you to play with that Lens Baby look, where everything else in the scene seems to be just sort of flowing away from the sharp area. You focus Lens Babies by pushing in or pushing the front of the lens away from the camera body, and you move the sweet spot, the part of the lens that's in focus, around by simply moving the front of the lens itself around. It's on like a plastic concertina sort of thing, so it's very easy to do. You can get instant feedback from, you know, in the viewfinder, so it's easy enough to do. But I do find that focusing can be a little bit hit and miss, especially when using the wider apertures, f2.8 as I am here, or no ring at all, which means that you're shooting at f2. It can be particularly difficult, and it is relatively soft at these apertures. You also need to bear in mind that the more you bend the Lens Baby, the less accurate your camera's meter is going to function. So you have to be pretty careful with exposure, even if you're using exposure compensation, or if you go to manual mode, you won't have to worry about compensation so much, but you will have to really sort of keep your eye on exposure. As long as you're shooting digital, you'll be fine. You just sort of keep checking the histogram and adjust the exposure as necessary to keep things sweet. So that's about it. I really just wanted to quickly mention about the Lens Baby. I know that I've been using this and the version 1 before it for a while, never really posted many shots on the website, but you know, they're good for a bit of fun. And some people, you know, even once you really get used to using these things, I have heard of people using them in a professional situation as well. So, you know, definitely, you know, no reason to be too concerned about the fact that they're a relatively cheap lens. That's it for this week. I hope that you've enjoyed these first two single exposures episodes. Before we finish, I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of you that nominated this podcast in the Podcast Awards. As I record this, it's the afternoon of Sunday the 15th, so there's a few hours left to nominate me if you are listening to this, you know, this podcast very, very soon after release. But I think that pretty much I wasn't aware of the podcast awards until the 12th, a few days ago, until a member kindly reminded me. But, you know, with just 3 days, we may have missed the boat. We may not get enough votes, even if we get everyone that would have voted voting, I'm talking to go through into the sort of final rounds. But still, it was great to see you guys rallying around and trying to drum up some nominations. So, you know, very heartwarming. I just thought I'd say thanks for all of your support. Remember that the movement assignment is underway. All entries should be shot after Monday the 25th of June 2007 up to the end of the assignment on August the 5th. You'll be able to upload your entries to the assignment album on mbpgalleries.com until the end of Sunday the 5th anywhere in the world. So no need to worry about time zones. For more details, take a listen to episode 92. And that's really it for this week. So thanks for listening, and we'll speak again next week. Bye-bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com